There was a famous American philosopher who, when he was young, went through a personal crisis. He originally wanted to be an artist. His father said, "No way." And his father did a good job of blocking all the exits. So the young man went into a depression. And he started wondering, do we actually have free will? Is the universe already set in motion in a way that we can't control, can't change? And he finally read the work of another philosopher who said that the best way to assert your free will is first to believe in free will and then to act on that. So that's what he decided to do. He went on to become a very productive philosopher, very productive thinker. His depression haunted him for the rest of his life, but he was able to fight it off through that assertion of his power to act, his power to make choices. As he said, what makes life meaningful, what gives it significance? So on the one hand, you have ideals, and two, you have to struggle in order to realize those ideals. He put it in general terms like that. But you could think how it applies to the Buddha and to the Dharma that the Buddha taught. The Buddha's ideal was happiness that is harmless, happiness that is true. And it was going to involve some struggle outside, but primarily a struggle inside. That's the path we're embarked on here. We believe that we have choice. As he said, if you didn't have choice in how you shape the present moment, the path to the end of suffering would be impossible. As he later described the principles of causality, some things that you experience right now come from the past. There are some things that have been set in motion. But they're like lots of seeds planted in a field. Some are ready to sprout, some are not ready to sprout. Some will sprout if you water them, and others will wait, even if you water them. And some of them are going to sprout whether you water them or not. You want to focus on the ones that you think are worth watering, because it requires that we have present moment intentions for these seeds of past karma to actually be experienced. That's one of the radical realizations you gain with awakening, realizing exactly how much everything depends on your intentions here in the present moment. That carries possibilities, but also carries responsibilities. But you want to focus on the possibilities. We're not just here watching causes and conditions rolling on. We're playing a role. And you have your choice as to what kind of role you want to play. If you believe that what you do doesn't make any difference, you don't have any energy to make a real difference. Life becomes hard. You want to spend all your time sleeping. Every time you go to bed, you say, "May I just not wake up?" You want to bury yourself in oblivion. It's a miserable life. So you make up your mind that you will make a difference, believe that you can, accept the teachings on the principle of karma, and have conviction in what the Buddha taught. Have conviction in the Buddha himself. He was someone who was true, who took that principle of there must be a way to put an end to suffering, and did everything he could to find whether it was true or not. So he had the ideal, and he had the struggle. So when we're convinced in his awakening, we're convinced both in the content of his awakening and in the quality of him as a person. And then we reflect on ourselves. We may not be as outstanding as he was in all his many virtues, but as he said, his awakening was dependent on some qualities we all have in potential form. We can be ardent about some things. We can be heedful about some things. We can be resolute in the face of some dangers, some challenges. Let's work on those qualities. That's how the strength of conviction leads to the next strength, which is persistence. Once you believe that your actions make a difference, then you can do them. Don't let your laziness hold you back. Conviction is meant to overcome your depression. To overcome that sense that life doesn't have any meaning. Persistence is meant to overcome your laziness. Sometimes you have no energy to do anything because you don't believe in the power of action. Other times, that's not the problem. You just don't want to put forth the effort, and the mind puts up all kinds of excuses. So you have to keep reminding yourself that your efforts do make a difference, and if you don't do them now, when are you going to get them done? The things that need to be developed inside. It's not a path that gets easier as you get older. So you do it now. And then you call to mind all that you've learned about the Buddhist teachings. And in particular, all the things that inspire you. When we think about mindfulness, we think mainly about the four frames of reference, the body, feelings, mind states, mental qualities in and of themselves. But mindfulness also involves recollecting the Buddha, the Dhamma, the Sangha, being inspired by them. All part of gladdening the heart. So you can put forth the effort that's needed to get the mind into concentration, because that's where your nourishment, that's where your strength is going to come from, of all the various strengths that the Buddha teaches. Concentration is one that he compares to food, that image of the fortress at the frontier. You've got the soldiers of right effort. You've got the gatekeeper of mindfulness. These people need to eat, and concentration is their food. They go look in the stores of food in the fortress, and some of them, like the first jhana, the Buddha says, is like grass. Wait till you get to the fourth jhana and you get honey, ghee, butter. But you need the concentration in order to maintain your strength and also to turn around and strengthen your conviction, strengthen your persistence, strengthen your mindfulness. It's not the case that these lists that the Buddha gives are all 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. You master one, and then you think about doing 2, and then from 2 you think about doing 3. They feed on one another. After all, it's in higher stages of concentration that your mindfulness gets purified. And it's in the practice of mindfulness that your persistence turns into ardency. You really are ardent in wanting to do this. And a good part of the concentration is learning how to get the mind to settle down, learning what's needed to do. This is where your discernment comes in. And John Mahabhu gets good at analogy. He says, for some people, concentration is easy. They're like a tree out in the middle of a meadow. There's no other trees around. There's nothing to entangle it. If you want to cut it down, you don't have to think too much about which direction you want it to go or which branches have to be disentangled. You just cut it and it falls. Other people, though, need some discernment. They use their discernment in order to get the mind down. Those, he said, are like a tree in a forest. Its branches are entangled with the branches of other trees. It's not the case that when you cut it down, it will fall in any direction you want, because some of the trees, the other trees around it, will be in the way. So you have to figure out which branches you have to cut, both on the tree you want and on the other trees, and decide which direction you want it to fall. They didn't get it down. Because sometimes you're sitting down to meditate, there are lots of things entangling your mind. It's like your brain is full of branches going on entangled with the world. And you've got to cut the branches. You cut the branches outside, you will find other branches inside too. You've got pains in the body. How do you deal with those? In some cases, you can ignore them. In other cases, you know that you sit here for an hour, and if things don't settle down well in the first half hour, you're going to set yourself up for some pain for the last half hour. Well, work steadily on that first half hour. I found when I was first sitting in the group meditations at Wanasukhanam, my knees would get numb really fast. And there we sat for an hour and a half. So I realized, one, that the problem so much wasn't the blood flow in the knees, it was the blood flow in the back of my neck down the spine. And if I wanted to get it going well, I had to start at the very beginning of the hour, loosening up the flow of the energy down the spine. And then the problem with that particular type of pain went away. Other pains came up from other places, and they presented different problems. This is where you use your ingenuity. Think about dependent core rising. Where does feeling appear in dependent core rising? It appears lots of different places. In some cases, it appears together with perceptions. In some cases, it appears together with directed thought and evaluation. So when a pain in the body may seem to be invading the mind, ask yourself, is it your perception of the pain, the image you have of it? Or is it the way you talk about the pain? What are you telling yourself about it? Can you change the narrative? Does that change the relationship to the pain? Sometimes feeling is associated with intentions. What are your intentions right now that are aggravating the pain? Sometimes associated with attention. What are you paying attention to right now? Can you find the possibilities of why the pain is bothering the mind? There are not just one or two problems. There are lots of potentials, but the Buddha gives you a map, gives you a list of things to check off. So try to keep that map in mind. So we get the mind to settle down using our discernment. Of course, when the mind gets settled down, then your discernment can see things a lot more clearly, things that are subtle. The mind's whispering campaign. And you can work with that. So when you find yourself weak in the face of life at large, remind yourself that the Buddha offers you some ways of developing strength inside. Through conviction, persistence, mindfulness, concentration, discernment. These five strengths are so important that when he made a list of the Wings to Awakening, his basic teachings, he listed them twice. Once as five strengths, the second time as five faculties. When the strengths become faculties, they basically take over your mind. The word in Pali, indriya, is associated with Inda, the kings of the gods. They're in charge. So you want these strengths to get so strong that they take charge of your mind. That way, even though the world outside may be a mess, and not all that encouraging, you can encourage yourself inside, realizing that the things that really are worthwhile are the ideals you have to put into suffering. And whatever struggle is involved is worth the effort.